From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. California's governor was going to join Kamala Harris on the campaign trail in Iowa this weekend. The press releases had been sent out. A headline in the Sacramento Bee yesterday read, "Newsom to campaign in Iowa to aid Harris's presidential bid." Then yesterday afternoon, the plan changed. Kamala Harris made what seemed to be a sudden announcement, and we're going to share with you some of her message to campaign workers. This was from a video posted on Twitter.
So here's the deal, guys. My campaign for president simply does not have the financial resources to continue, and the financial resources we need to continue. I'm not a billionaire. I can't fund my own campaign. And as the campaign has gone on, it has become harder and harder to raise the money we need to compete. In good faith, I cannot tell you, my supporters and volunteers, that I have a path forward if I don't believe I do. So, to you, my supporters, my dear supporters, it is with deep regret, but also with deep gratitude, that I am suspending our campaign today.
A campaign, she says, that ran out of money. The picture, of course, is much more complicated than that. On the phone with us is Carla Marinucci, co-author of Politico's California Playbook. Hi, Carla.
Hey, Beth. Good to be with you.
How sudden do you think this decision was?
Wow. I mean, it looked really sudden. The night before, she had tweeted to Gavin Newsom, "Hey, welcome to Iowa. Bring a warm coat."
Yeah. So what happened? I think something happened in there.
I do too, Beth. I think what probably happened was a look at the bottom line. It looked like the money had run out. I mean, there was campaign dysfunction. There was message dysfunction. There was a lot going on in the Kamala Harris campaign, but no campaign can run without the cash. And that had to be just a hard look. That brought it down in the end. I mean, what we know is that Harris got her aides on an all-staff call on Tuesday. We heard that she was distraught in making that call, and she had qualified for the December debates. And you know, ironically, a super PAC had just cleared more than $1 million in TV ads in Iowa to boost her campaign, to talk about how she was the best equipped candidate to take on Trump. Those ads have been pulled. But yeah, you're right. You know, the night before, she looked ready to go with Gavin Newsom in Iowa, and then the hammer came down. So a lot of people had been saying for a few weeks that she needed to take a hard look at this and think about pulling out, and it happened.
I am going to put us in the arena of speculating right now, which I don't like to do, but just how might this have played out? Gavin Newsom has been her longtime friend. She's thinking about the situation she's putting him in. She's thinking about the hemorrhaging campaign. How might that conversation have gone?
Yeah, I think you're right. Look, at the last state Democratic convention, the buzz, which we wrote about, was how a lot of top strategists and top Democratic insiders were saying she needs to get out of the race, and who's going to tell her? That the polls have been bad in California. The latest PPIC poll showed that she was in fourth place. To come in that low in her own home state primary would have been a tremendous embarrassment. An IGS poll had something like 2/3 of California voters saying that they would rather her work as senator than as a presidential candidate. So the numbers weren't there for her. And every day that went by, it was becoming obvious that she was not only hurting her chances, in the future in her own Senate seat, maybe encouraging a primary challenge from, say, a rich guy like Tom Steyer. Who knows? But she was also endangering the fact that maybe she still had a chance to be a vice presidential candidate or a cabinet member in a Democratic president administration. So for all those reasons, I think people wanted to tell her that this was just not happening anymore. And it looks like she finally got the message, however painful that was.
We could spend quite a bit of time here talking about what happened in her campaign, where it went. And by the way, one of her top staffers already went to the Michael Bloomberg campaign. It had been reported even before her announcement yesterday that Kelly Mellenbacher had joined on. So we could be there, but I think your column from today is more intriguing and more forward-looking, Carla. And that is, where does she go from here, and where do her supporters go from here?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's notable. She, you know, since that first launch in January, it was such a gangbusters launch with 20,000 people in Oakland. She immediately racked up all of these state legislators and state elected officials, including Newsom, Eleni Koulounakis, et cetera. But there were still a number of folks who held fast, who didn't go with her. Dianne Feinstein endorsed Biden. Barbara Boxer silent, as was Eric Garcetti. So the question is, I mean, will she be able to be a voice in this presidential race? A lot of people think she still has a lot of clout. She'll be able to bring something to whoever she ends up backing. And, you know, there were many Democrats that were angry at her after that first debate for her attack on Joe Biden with regard to busing. Many people said he would never consider as vice president. That's another question. You know, does she still have a future there as a potential down ticket candidate? So I think those are some of the intriguing questions. The other is who picks up the slack when it comes to the Democratic field that's left. We've got a debate coming December 19th here in California at Loyola Marymount. We're going to see Pete Buttigieg, Elizabeth Warren, Klobuchar, Biden, and Tom Steyer. And these folks are going to be vying for Kamala Harris's supporters. I think it's going to be a very, very lively contest there to pick those up and to pick up some of her big donors, Susie Tompkins Buell in San Francisco, one of the biggest Democratic donors in the country, right, backed Kamala Harris originally. She has since had a couple of fundraisers for Buttigieg. So it'll be interesting to see where some of these folks go.
Just reflecting on that moment you described, I want to read a paragraph or so from a different Politico article. This one headlined, "The Spectacular Collapse of Kamala Harris." It goes like this. Eventually, her most memorable moment, her exchange with Biden in the June debate over busing for school desegregation, turned into a mess when Harris flubbed the follow-through. She offered a muddled, shifting answer. It allowed Biden's campaign to paint her as opportunistic and a hypocrite. Her polling sugar high subsided. She slid to the level of Andrew Yang and Tulsi Gabbard and never recovered. How do you make sure the story going forward isn't written solely about that, the spectacular collapse, the flub, the all of what didn't happen?
Right. I think Kamala Harris has kind of a unique opportunity now to sort of right her own ship, and that comes with the impeachment trial in the Senate. We saw her feistiness today or yesterday when President Trump tweeted, "Hey, sorry to see you go, Kamala," and she tweeted back, "Yeah, well, we'll be seeing you in the trial, Mr. President." She has made her reputation in many respects in her very sharp questioning on the Senate committees when it came to the lead up on this impeachment. So I think her role there, people will be watching what she does in when it gets to the Senate. And I think she'll have the opportunity to kind of shine again. I think that Kamala Harris, you know, she's had this spectacular political ascendancy in California, from DA in San Francisco to AG to senator, and then to becoming a top-tier candidate, albeit for a short while. But the fact is, a lot of people, and in fact, we spoke to Gavin Newsom at the California Democratic Convention. He said, look, she's got so much promise. She's going to be fine no matter what. I talked to Sam Liccardo yesterday, the mayor of San Jose, who said, I think with Kamala Harris, the best is yet to come. So I think, you know, it's way too early to write a political obituary for her. She has still a lot of ambition, a lot of followers. And by getting out early, I think she salvages a lot of goodwill. And a lot of folks are going to be rooting for her to make a comeback.
Let me add a few comments, Carla, from people we spoke with yesterday. Democratic political consultant Shonda Wesley said that she thought Harris's political future was, quote, extremely bright. And she said she'll learn the hard lessons this campaign taught her. We talked to Republican strategist Mike Madrid, whom you know well, and Mike said, I think she has the opportunity to kind of rebuild. He said there's no question this was a setback, not just for this race, but I think for the moment the shine on her national star has lost some luster, and she'll have to start really defining and building a reputation now for at least one, perhaps two issue sets in the U.S. Senate. So again, the comment there is about opportunity. We talked to Cassandra Pai, who is a strategist, a Republican woman with a prominent voice in the state. And she said, given Kamala Harris's endorsements in California and her fundraising prowess, I would expect whomever becomes the Democratic nominee to stay close to her one way or another. And that's the foreshadowing of not just the vice president role, but a cabinet position, perhaps.
Yeah, I think, you're already hearing people talking about that. Hey, is it possible? Attorney General in a Democratic administration. I think she's going to have to take a hard look at what brought her down in this race. One of them was messaging, the fact that she couldn't seem to commit to some big issues when it came to Medicare for All or even her role as a prosecutor. She came out of the box as Kamala Harris for the people and then seemed to walk back from that when some of the progressive Democrats accused her of being too tough on crime. I mean, so I think in the future, that's going to be an issue. And I also think the way the campaign was run itself, it was a bi-coastal campaign run out of Baltimore and San Francisco. There was a lot of criticism about the fact that her sister was a main voice in that campaign, and that may have created a lot of friction. There was an internal firing squad going on in that campaign. So those are some of the things she's going to have to deal with if she wants to have a strong political future. As I said, I mean, there were so many endorsers for her here in California. I think that there's no question that people are going to be watching her, and she will be someone to watch. And now getting out early, avoiding the embarrassment of a debacle in the Super Tuesday primary and in Iowa and New Hampshire, I think this gives her a chance to reset. And Kamala Harris has always been good at that. Let's be honest.
Well, just in a final few seconds, Carla, to me, having been in media in a long time in California, it seemed that she hadn't truly defined herself even in this state. And then you wrote about that in your Playbook article today as you talked to Loyola Law School professor Jessica Levinson. And she said, she never held a commanding lead in California, which is telling because this is the place that voters should know her best. I'm left wondering, how much did we know about her?
That is a question. U.S. senator, but only for a very short time when she took on this run for president. So you're absolutely right. Even in California, a lot of voters didn't know who she was. And that is the big challenge for anybody who wants to run for president out of California. As we know, big state, 40 million people, and a major challenge with 8 to 10 major media markets, an expensive place. So, yes, she has to now come back to California and reintroduce herself to folks here and start again. And I think Kamala Harris, it looks like from even her Twitter feeds, she's on that already speak, Beth.
Before I let you go, Carla, a question about Duncan Hunter. What changed? Why did he plead guilty yesterday when he hadn't before?
Wow. I mean, this is a guy who had the golden ticket to hold that seat for the rest of his life, given the dynasty that he and his father had. I think after suggesting it was fake news and a witch hunt, et cetera, Duncan Hunter came face to face with reality, that is doing hard time and his children, the effects on his children and his family. And I think he saw the reality check was there finally after years. So it's going to be interesting to see how much time he will actually serve. He actually hasn't formally resigned the seat or said he will yet. So I think there's still some ties to be taken care of here. But the fact is, he showed no emotion, but he had to make that guilty plea. And that had to be a hard moment for Duncan Hunter.
pleading guilty yesterday to conspiracy to misuse campaign money. All right, Carla, I could fill the hour in a chat with you, but
always good to be with you, Beth.
Save it for next time. Carla Marinucci, thank you so much. And Carla writes the California Playbook column with Jeremy B. White for Politico. We have posted today's column, a link to it anyway, at capradio.org/insight. You're listening to Insight on Cap Radio.
Well, it has been quite a week already politically. Not only do we have the impeachment hearings that have been going on all day, but we also have Kamala Harris dropping out of the race. We have Devin Hunter deciding. Duncan Hunter.
Right,
sorry.
Right, right.
I get Devin Nunes and Duncan Hunter confused. We have Duncan Hunter pleading guilty. I mean, there's all kinds of things in the political landscape that are going on. And we're the place to bring it to you. And thankfully, you're coming to us for that information. I'm Bob Moffitt. I'm the Sacramento Region reporter. And Amanda Audrain from Member Services.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
And it's Fund Drive time.
It's the best time of the year for us. I mean, we get to talk to a lot of the people who donate. We get to see, you know, what is motivating and what is important to you. And we seek all the time to provide that service and to provide it in a credible way. I know that I, you know, really have a great esteem for the reporters that walk through these halls, and we all, you know, try to hold ourselves to high standards, and we know that you appreciate that too. Make a monthly donation. We know you are listening right now, and this service is important. Call 1-800-800-5867, or you can go online and make a gift at capradio.org.
My name is Hope, and I've been listening to NPR for a very long time. I'm a senior on a limited income, and this time I just decided I was going to spend what I could, so that's what I've done, and I'm very grateful to know that we have a news source that's ethical and that we can trust. Thank you so much for all you do for everyone, and God bless you.
Little known fact, you have two members, alumni of the Reynolds School of Journalism here speaking.
Wait, who? Who are we talking about? Oh, wait, you and me.
Oh, that's right. Oh. That's right. University of Nevada. So we're giving a challenge. We're challenging all of our Nevada alumni, friends, family, et cetera. If you haven't, donated, been a part of this before, then we're challenging you to join us now as two Nevada alumni to raise your voice and let us know that, you know, the service provide, because it's not only California, it's in the Sierra, and then we're also in Reno, Carson City, Fernley, Fallon, and we have Bert Johnson up there now covering that region
Bert
for us.
Fantastic.
As well.
Bob's also mentioned that he is going to dye half of his hair silver. Wait, it is, and then half of it blue.
Oh, that was a
right
low blow.
Well, I'm just saying that'll work out if we make our goal. If we have enough people donate from that area, don't you think?
Yes, I'm going to dye the rest of my hair silver. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, join us. 800-800-5867, 800-800-5867, or go online, capradio.org, and tell us, you know, where you're from and why you're listening and what's important to you.
My name is Michael. I'm calling from Citrus Heights. I am a person with a severe visual impairment, so reading the newspaper or even reading things on computer screens are a little bit of a challenge, so I really depend on hearing my news, and the news is of the highest of quality. And by the way, I challenge all the visually impaired people out there in the Sacramento area to contribute as well. Thank you.
You know, I think that's an important point that he made, that, you know, often we don't necessarily have time, or we maybe, things get busy, and we're also, you know, working to service some, you know, our whole community. And it's really important for us to be able to hear our news and to be able to sort of multitask. I know I do that when I'm driving in the morning. We know you think it's important to, when you go online today at capradio.org, you can also choose to have a portion of your donation sent to the food bank, to a food bank in your local area. We're going to give 5% back for that. So, you know, do it right now. If you can give $10 a month, that's a great starting point. 1-800-800-5867, or you can go online to capradio.org, and we really appreciate it.
You know, there are the national programs. There's Fresh Air. There's All Things Considered. And then there are the local reporters. We have PolitiFact. Chris Nichols just did something on housing and why housing is so expensive. We have a healthcare reporter. We have an environment reporter. We have Sacramento Region reporters. We have a Reno Sparks Nevada reporter. And all of these people, this is a luxury that we have. A lot of public radio stations don't have it, but we've been able to, thanks to your generosity, been able to build this staff so that we can cover it in a way that is important, brings the important issues to you. So contribute that, continue that, 800-800-5867, or go online, capradio.org. And of course, we thank you.